Thanks for joining, everyone. I'm Tom Wick from Morgan Stanley TMT Specialty Sales, joined by Joe Moore, our semis research analyst. Special guest Lee Simpson, who covers Arm for us. I had him join given the CPU commentary last night, getting so much attention. And my TMT sales partner, Skyler Reesum. We're going to talk about the NVIDIA quarter, the CPU controversy, what to expect in the Computex. If you have questions, please send me a Bloomberg IB as I'm not watching the webinar Q&A window. But first, a disclaimer. Please note this call is for Morgan Stanley clients and appropriate employees only. This call is not for members of the press. For important disclosures, please see the Morgan Stanley Research Disclosure website. Okay. Joe, so this seemed, you kind of characterized this as like down the fairway, even though they, put up another like multi-billion-dollar beat and raise. Kind of big picture before we get into the CPU controversy. Are we just kind of spoiled by NVIDIA at this point in terms of like the quarterly execution where they put up these like record-breaking quarters, 85% growth, and the market kind of shrugs?
Yeah, I tell the CFO this every callback. I'm like, I'm sorry that we're sort of, this has become mundane. I mean, you grew by $13 billion sequentially. The entire ASIC business is about six, right? Like it took 20 years to build to six, and like we're growing by 2x that in a given quarter. That's the, third biggest logic company in my coverage that you're adding on a quarterly basis. You beat by $3.6 billion. So really impressive numbers. And everything was just a little bit better than we previewed, right? That we had sort of previewed that it would be good, but it was kind of like, a billion higher on the quarter. And the guidance that I think people talked about, the gross margin, we were a little bit below consensus, I think, but they came in a little bit above. So I think that's a little better. I think the Vera Rubin timing is crystallized, So I think it was a very good quarter. And we hold them to a very high standard. Like if they don't annihilate every aspect of consensus, we sort of are sure that there's something wrong. And I'm not sure, I think in a way they've just trained us by putting up so much upside that like we feel like if they don't, that, maybe there's some anxiety. But very good. The company operating at a very high level. Supply chain is unbelievably good in an unbelievably difficult supply chain environment. So yeah, overall, very impressive numbers. Nothing that changes your mind though, right? If you were negative, you're still negative. If you're positive, you're still positive. I certainly am on the positive side of the ledger.
Okay. All right. So let's get into the most incremental comment last night and what's generating the most questions this morning from investors is they talked about visibility into $20 billion of standalone CPU sales this year, which matters in the context of the huge moves we've seen in the CPU complex, Intel, AMD, Arm. And there's a debate around whether this includes the head node or not. So, obviously I'm very well versed in this, but just for the generalists on the line who may not understand why this matters, what the head node is, can you just explain that a little bit, like why this debate matters? And then we'll get into your view on it.
Yeah, sure. So I like the way that like AMD has parsed the CPU market, but there's when you buy Grace Blackwell, right? The whole definition of the kind of rack scale compute that NVIDIA has on offer is that you buy a card that has a single microprocessor on it, which is Grace in the Blackwell case, Vera for Rubin, and two GPUs, right? So there's a 2-to-1 ratio before we started, which is why I don't like some of the Intel kind of ratio math that they use. And that's going to be all NVIDIA. How much of that we should apportion to CPU revenue is sort of hard to determine because while they do sell the components, I mean, you're buying a card that has one microprocessor, two GPUs, an NVMe switch, a bunch of DRAM. How much are we charging for what? Is I think there's probably some latitude. So I think you probably, I'm totally guessing, but I think about half of the $20 billion is that, right? That we're giving ourselves about $3,000 per CPU, which we've already had. That's not new. That's not coming at the competitive expense of anyone else. And then, and again, totally guessing, but like we're sort of projecting something like $10 billion of standalone CPU. And that's entirely new, right? Up until about 3 months ago, NVIDIA wasn't selling standalone CPUs. They announced 3 months ago deals with CoreWeave and Meta, where they started selling standalone Vera to both, in the case of Meta, also Grace. And then there was a blog post about 3 days ago where Ian Buck was hand-delivering standalone CPUs to four major customers, three of which I think I'm not allowed to mention, but really important customers. And, you know, basically everybody who doesn't have their own ARM CPU, meaning, you know, Amazon and Google have very high volume internal ARM CPUs, NVIDIA is selling to. Now, how much they're selling, at what price point, you know, don't really know. I asked around, I said, could they be doing billions of dollars with you this year? The answer is if they can get the wafers, for sure, right, that they will, that there's demand for it. And so, and NVIDIA can get the wafers, I think. You know, they said they'll be sold out on Vera through the life of the product. But, you know, they have an aggressive supply chain. They are increasing production on older nodes on 4 nanometer. And so I think, you know, they'll have supply there. They can free up 3 nanometer supply for Vera. So I think it's an important consideration. I think they're, you know, but it's not like 20 billion of like suddenly we're taking $20 billion away from Intel and AMD. It's not that. I mean, 10 of that was probably already NVIDIA's to begin with. And then there's an additional, you know, maybe 10 of like growing into these kind of agentic CPU racks and taking advantage of the very strong growth that Lee has been writing about there.
Yeah. Let's go to Lee. Like some of the clients last night were saying, oh, this is a huge deal for ARM. Maybe just talk about the read through to ARM from the CPU commentary and like what the actual financial impact would be when you do the envelope math on 20 billion.
Sure. So obviously this is an NVIDIA chip and, you know, Joe's outlined that quite well. The royalty rate here, I think for a Grace chip, it was about $35, $36. It's probably $40 and slightly above for a Vera chip at this point for ARM. So you're around about sort of that 1.5% royalty rate, maybe slightly lower than that, which feels about right given the amount of work that, guys like NVIDIA do on their CPU. In fact, this is what's often missed, actually a multi-threaded core, which is really stands out as an exception in the ARM community. But getting back,
请关注公众号思维纪要社，更多纪要请加V CN202101130.
To what it means for ARM, if it is 10 billion sales, as Joe's saying here, for the agentic CPU side, that's probably inferring about three and a half million chips on that $3,000 price point, which we kind of agree with. As well, three and a half times 40 gives you, you know, what are we saying here? 12. Sorry, I'm getting this number wrong. Times 40 is about $120 million top line. By the time you get to bottom line, that's probably about $80 million, and that's so that's probably about 8 cents impact. It's about a billion sales billion shares for ARM. So 8 cents on what I think people were expecting, around about 1.8, 1.7 EPS for this year, isn't a lot of upside, like 3 or 4% for ARM at this point. But I think there's other things we should really be keeping in mind. One is that this does rubber stamp ARM as, or the architecture as valid in agentic CPUs. Secondly, this is going to be a multi-threaded chip, so it does put the debate around single-threaded versus multi-threaded into some kind of light. And I think there will be, have to be some sort of answer from ARM. What we got speaking to the company was a lot of people will switch off the multi-threading. I'm not sure how that's doable, but this is what the company is saying to us this morning anyway. And I think equally, it probably tells us that there will be other players coming into this space. So you've moved a head node CPU into the agentic world. I think other guys will be thinking about doing so. I mean, Joe's already talked about Graviton and Axion and so forth. I think all these chips will move over. And then I think we'll have other players coming in from the ARM community offering CPUs in this space as well. So it'll be an interesting one. There's some brokers out there saying ARM's going to have a big share of the chips themselves in the ARM architecture. I think not. I think the company even themselves say we're going to be about sort of 20, 30%, maybe 25%, let's say, of that market. I think even that's a little high, because now you've got probably your biggest competitor coming in, NVIDIA, that you'll have to compete with just within the ARM instruction set community. So really interesting. I think it is maybe a net positive for ARM, certainly on the earnings for this year. But interesting, NVIDIA's moved into this space and has really recognized something at work here. It also, maybe last point, puts a little bit of pressure on ARM on wafer availability. Now, we think they're going to put some of their balance sheet to work to secure some of that capacity at TSMC, maybe a big prepayment, maybe even an equity stake. It's all sorts of things they're looking into right now. But if there is a big soak up by NVIDIA on that 3-nanometer, there might be even less for ARM to go around. So they may have to play that secondary market that we hear about in wafers this year, at least anyway.
Yep. All right. Well, thank you, Lee, for joining on short notice. Let's go back to Joe. More questions around the CPU number. Does it include DRAM? Does it include racks? And then people trying to understand, you know, on a like-for-like basis, how this compares to AMD and Intel. I know that might be sort of impossible, but maybe if you can try your best and just how, you know, what are the implications for those competitors where the stocks have outperformed NVIDIA so dramatically?
Yeah, it does not include DRAM. I'm not sure where that idea really came from, but it doesn't. They've confirmed that. You know, like I said, the head node pricing is sort of indeterminate because it's part of a bundle sale. But when you start selling standalone CPUs, you're going to need to be competitive with the market price, and I assume they will be. I think they're going to give us a lot more color on this at the sort of combined Computex GTC event in a week and a half. So they were reluctant to go too far because Jensen kind of wants to talk more. So we'll get some color, but I think they feel like the narrative of like CPU is now the most important thing in the data center. You know, they're not disagreeing with it, but they're sort of trying to make it clear that they're going to be competitive. How do I think about the peers? I mean, I think AMD continues to be in a very strong position with, you know, really to me, four generations of leadership product going all the way back to Milan and then Genoa and Turin and now Venice. You know, the notion that AMD is going to lose market share because, you know, Intel has factories always seems specious to me. Because AMD can build on any of those nodes, right? That Venice is on 2-nanometer, which isn't particularly tight, in my mind. So I think AMD's in a strong position. You know, Intel has a weaker roadmap and is going to benefit from pricing and, you know, maybe availability out of the factories and things like that. But I think this demonstrates these are not commodity products. These are roadmaps. And I think if you go too far leaning into this, raising prices, particularly when Intel's, you know, lack of supply has been part of the problem here, I think it would be dangerous. And I think Lip-Bu's a long-term thinker. I think he's not going to do things that would put his reputation at risk by raising prices too much. And so I think in some ways the Intel narrative is a little bit ahead of itself. The hard part of that is Intel's going to still have good numbers in the near term because of this reality of the market. But, you know, you're trading at 10 times revenues. You know, you're trading at a very high earnings multiple. And if those earnings are completely dependent on an ongoing shortage, well, you know, I can buy other stocks that are much cheaper benefiting from that shortage. So, you know, I don't want to chase Intel here. And I do think that NVIDIA could prove a lot here. And I think ARM, you know, clearly has a role in these data centers, and we don't quite know what that looks like. A lot of the merchant ARM server CPU vendors have kind of moved in other directions. And so, you know, I think NVIDIA has a nice greenfield opportunity to really go after it. And I think, like I said, I don't really push back on this outsized growth of CPU. I think it's real. I don't like the ratio math. I like the idea of, okay, we have a certain amount of CPUs that are involved in the AI rack that do orchestration and whatnot. And then you have CPUs that are doing normal enterprise-centric things. And then you have CPUs that are doing new agentic workloads. And that's really the growth category that we're all trying to go after. And I think sizing that is going to be critical.
Another controversy on the print is Rubin timing. I mean, they were pretty clear on the earnings call that, you know, they're on time for second half, you know, starting in 3Q. But, you know, clients pointed out some of the new risk factors in the filing and connect that with some of the supply chain chatter around potential changes or thermal, whatever delays. You know, what's your latest on Vera Rubin timing from the company, and what are your checks telling you on the demand here?
Yeah. So I think there is normal startup stuff going on, a lot of what you're characterizing. I've heard it as, you know, a week here and there kind of issues that we're working through. So, you know, they did actually, the timing was always second half and did become Q3. So that's a little bit more specific in the very near term. But I think we're basically tracking. And I think the rumors that it's like 6 months delayed and things like that, I don't think are true. Now, that doesn't mean there aren't some changes to the roadmap that are more significant. There's been rumors that they'll have like an HBM3E flavor of Rubin instead of the more standard HBM4. I talked to the company about that. They're like, we've said HBM4, we feel pretty good. So I don't think there's any big changes like that, but it's still possible. And I think those risk factors would highlight that, as we saw with Blackwell, there can be 11th hour issues, but I feel pretty good about it. And I think the most important thing is like the story here, the narrative of like how well the ASICs are doing is almost always an ASIC that will have general availability later than Rubin. That might outperform Rubin. For example, you know, TPU V8, people say it's, you know, better inference cost than Blackwell. It's like, well, you know, that may or may not be true, but TPU V8 will have general availability after Rubin. So if NVIDIA is making this claim, and I would echo it from our checks, is that, you know, the best cost per token, the most economic AI factory is Vera Rubin. And if that's true, it's a very powerful statement. It doesn't mean that you gain market share all the time, right? And that's important because the world's just not going to get that much Vera Rubin this year. So even if it's the thing that everybody wants, the practical consideration is I need compute and I'm making a choice between Blackwell and TPU V7 and eventually V8, Trainium 2 and eventually Trainium 3, MI355 and eventually MI455. There's a lot of agnosticism of like, just get me compute wherever you can. I need it. I want it. I don't care if it's the best thing, but I still put outsized importance on like, is this still the best thing? And I think we'll prove that out hopefully in the next 6 months. And I think then, you know, all this other stuff will kind of become secondary because the thing you want the most is also the thing that provides you not just the best near-term ROI, but the best long-term duration, right? I can depreciate it in 5 years and maybe it's still useful. on some level, I think that's just tremendously important. And, you know, this notion of like, okay, the ASIC is cheaper, right? That the gross margin of the ASIC is lower. But if it's true that that's not giving me a better ROI, then, you know, and Jensen made the comment at our conference that in real time, we are seeing companies that thought that cheaper silicon was the answer coming back to us, right? Which could be a pretty big ramp for them at Amazon this year, a pretty big ramp at Google last year, right? The guys who have ASICs are ramping a lot of GPUs, right? So I feel very good about that competitive dynamic. I think that's really the heart of this bet, right? And I mean, the market share is kind of secondary because it's who has supply when and comparisons versus a year ago and things like that. But if that kind of core contention of like, this is the best AI factory economics and, you know, remarkable that you can do it at 75% gross margin when the peers are in the high 50s, but, you know, they have for 10 years, right? And we've always sort of known that other people could get in front of them and they've maintained that. So I think Vera Rubin's very important. I think we'll have to assess it as we get closer, but my read early on would be fairly bullish.
Let's talk cash return. This is probably the only company where you can announce an $80 billion incremental buyback and people are like, oh, I thought it was supposed to be bigger. So, you know, there were expectations for $100 billion plus, you know, a couple of people mentioned $200 billion this morning. I think there was a hope that we would get something really big, and then this would cause like a re-rating similar to, you know, Apple, you know, maybe a decade ago. What's your view on the cash return here?
Yeah, I mean, I heard the same complaints. I mean, I think they made comments at GTC that, which was in March, that we will return 50% of free cash flow, you know, starting in the second half. And I think the $80 billion plus $25 billion dividend would be essentially the second half, 50% of the second half free cash flow, right? So there's three quarters left in the year and we're not giving you 50% for the rest of the year, but we are giving you that for the second half. And, you know, we will do that on an ongoing basis, I think. You know, and I mean, a lot of the investments that we've been making in the last 2 years to not buy back stock have been investing in supply chain partners and customers, and those are monetizable as well, right? So at some point, I think they've made a lot of really good investments that could pan out an additional cash flow. So I think the cash return will come. And I do think it's part of the kind of more structural, like as you said, the Apple example of like, you just get the benchmark just gets too big, right? That people can't be overweight mathematically. And I think the cash return and things like that can help. I think there was also a little bit of criticism of the dividend, right? Which is a, you know, a dollar a share is a pretty significant dollar amount. It's a 0.5% yield. And so, you know, people don't buy a stock for a 0.5% yield. So do we need a bigger dividend or 100% buyback? There's a lot of criticisms, but I mean, to me, it sort of starts with like the cash flow generation is pretty good. And, you know, stock trades at like 17 times. There's a lot of good you can do with your cash when you trade at that kind of a multiple. So I think they'll manage through it pretty well. I haven't been a huge fan of 100% of the circular investments that they've made. I understand people's angst about that, but I think we should just accept that, right? They're going to make those investments they believe in the ecosystem and will continue to make those. And so 50% of free cash generation getting return seems about the right ballpark.
And so the other, I feel like, big part of this print was on margins. I know you had previewed a perhaps downside risk on just like the Rubin ramp, but it looks like it actually gross margins were kind of stable around 75%. Has your outlook into the second half changed, or how are you thinking about the trajectory now?
I mean, we're talking about very small gradations, right? But I think, they've talked about mid 70s, but when you sort of parse that, you know, they're like, please don't model above 75, right? And I think that's very pragmatic and prudent, right? Is it's counterproductive if your margin targets are too high. You end up like hurting your competitiveness and like making bad decisions. And so I don't think they want to go above 75. And then you're like, okay, are there headwinds? Well, sure. You know, DRAM is a major cost input. And, I think, HBM cost is like 25% of cost of sales, which is like 5% of revenue. So if HBM prices double, which they've more than doubled, then you got to pass that through at 75% gross margin. You have to raise prices like 20%. You have to raise prices a lot. Now that people sort of forget that the ASIC guys have the same challenge. And in a way, like their percentage of revenue for HBM is like 16-17%. So if they want to maintain 50% gross margin, they have to mark it up even more. So I think those are all challenges. I think they're managing through that well. I think in some cases for HBM, it has bolted to the chip. You can't unbundle it, but for the SOCAMs, the DRAM that goes onto the cards, in some cases, I think they're going to have the cloud guys buy that memory themselves, sort of bypassing NVIDIA, get a little less revenue, but you have an easier time with gross margin. So long-winded way of saying, I think they're managing through those challenges pretty well so far. I think that the language was kind of like, 75 plus or minus two, but like not plus. Right. So then you're like, really, my mid-70s is 73, 75. That's still kind of the language, but it's kind of like, I'm like, should we model for 75 in the back half? And it's kind of like, probably prefer you to be a little lower than that, but you're probably in the ballpark. Like it doesn't feel like it's 73. So I continue to model this company, what I think of as fairly conservatively, both top line and margin. You know, we're 17 times next year's earnings. We don't need to be heroes. Like this is, to me, there's room for things to even decelerate a little bit. I don't see that at all. This is just pure value. This is trading at, basically half the valuation of everything else in the AI ecosystem. I get the reasons for that on some level is like you're a huge portion of the benchmark and gross margins can only go down and market share can only go down, but it's like, they're not really going down, right? So limited leverage for sure. And, we're in a target rich environment for leverage with all these commodity shortages and things, but on some level, you have to have the confidence to pay more than 17 times earnings for NVIDIA to pay like seven times a sort of once in a generation number for Micron, right? And I like Micron too. Like I'm not negative on it, but like this is a durability duration bet for all these names. And I think NVIDIA needs to lead the way forward.
Yeah. And on your point, Micron showed us kind of the risk of margins getting a little too high. But I guess one of our last questions would be, into Computex and GTC in Taiwan in a couple of weeks. What are you kind of expecting? I know one of the big notes they made last night was they kind of wanted to save some of the big CPU commentary for that. Is that kind of like your biggest expectation or anything else you'd want to call out?
Yeah, I mean, I like to go into these things with an open mind rather than trying to preview them too much because I'm going to learn from it and not like try to be overly predictive. But yeah, I think we're going to get more color on what they're doing in CPUs. As we get closer to Vera Rubin being in the wild, I think we'll get more color on what exactly that looks like. Maybe a little bit more on the future roadmap of Rubin Ultra, but there's been a lot of sort of stories about changes. And I think getting clarity on that will help. I think it's an important catalyst, right? There, you still have prominent bloggers saying that these products are 6 months delayed. And so I think, you know, the more we actually get to actually ship it and see real volume, I think that still matters, right? With that negativity that's out there. So I think, you know, and the great thing about NVIDIA, like you could sort of say, okay, there's limited leverage and all of that. And I get it. It's not the most exciting stock in the world at all times because of that. It's still, to me, the most interesting company in the world, right? There's so much interesting stuff that's just happening here all the time. They move so aggressively with the roadmap. I'm really looking forward to it. But we do, I'm going to be there. We have our AI summit the week before in Taiwan. I've got a good set of channel check meetings with a bunch of memory companies and some ASIC companies and some NVIDIA supply chain. And so hopefully we'll have some good insights coming out of this. I'm really excited for it. And I think that for NVIDIA, you know, the CPU thing is kind of more of a, it's a narrative thing. It's like, is the most important thing in the data center suddenly not us, right? And I think they're sort of saying, no, we're part of that too. And I think that's an important message.
All right, Joe, I have two more minutes. So since you're the memory axe, let me just ask you what you're picking up. Still long and strong, everything good?
Yeah, everything's really good. Like I still don't know what Q3 pricing looks like. And I know there's always angst about second derivative decel on like momentum type stuff. But I would say in terms of the anxiety level, the feeling that in particular DRAM is not just tight, but is the bottleneck, is the limiter. That seems very clear. And companies are thinking that problem, whether they're right or wrong, I don't know, but that problem gets worse in 2027 and gets worse again in 2028. That's what leads to the long-term agreements, which to me are important kind of symptomatic elements. I'm not banking on the long-term agreements to be different this time. I'm banking on the LTAs to sort of demonstrate just how much of a crisis this is. So I still feel very good. I think, you know, Micron's about 7 times our number and NVIDIA's about 17 times. I still slightly favor NVIDIA within that, and that might seem weird.
请关注公众号,思维纪要社,更多纪要请加V,CN2021-0130.
But I mean, Micron's really expensive on any number that they've ever achieved before now. So it's really, we need to believe in the durability of this. And I don't indefinitely believe that, but I do believe that for the next couple of years, this is going to be very strong. Enormous cash flow coming in that can be transformative. So, still really excited for memory. NVIDIA is our top pick. You know, Micron not far behind. And I really like some of the broad names like Analog Devices. I really like here and things like that. So it's a target rich environment for semis. And I want to be focused on the commodities, but also focused on the names that like NVIDIA or ADI that aren't shortages, aren't temporary cyclical situations, just very strong, solid growth drivers.
All right. Well, Joe, Lee, thank you for your time. Clients, if you have any follow-up questions, please let us know and have a good rest of the week.
Yeah, thanks, everyone. Good to see you, Lee.
Thank you. Cheers.
Take it easy. Bye.